You're listening to Day at a Time. I'm Pooh.
And I'm William Cooper.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I can show you the world. Shining, shimmering, splendid. Tell me, princess, now when did you last let your heart decide? I can open your eyes, make you wonder by wonder, over, sideways, and under, on a magic carpet ride, a whole new world. Fantastic point of view. No one to tell us no of where to go. Anywhere of you to do anything.
A whole new world. A dazzling place I never knew. But when I found you, it's so clear that now I'm in a whole new world.
Now I'm in a whole new world.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to continue tonight where I left off on Friday night with the religion of Baha'i, the Baha'i faith they call it, or Baha'ism. It is the only approved religion of the United Nations. It is the only religion recognized, for that matter, by the United Nations. And if you want to know where we're going with this new world religion, you had better understand that what the United Nations recognizes is most probably going to have an awful lot to do with whatever world religion emerges from the birth of the world totalitarian socialist state. Baha'ism and the Bible. What is the difference between what Christians teach and Mormons teach and the Baha'is teach and the Protestants teach and Catholics teach? Or the Hindus or the Buddhists? You'll find that there's quite a bit. Baha'ism teaches the following, ladies and gentlemen, so listen very closely. The only God. They teach that their God is the only God. And here's the quote directly from their own literature. Further than this, man has no other point for concentration. He is God. Who is he? Baha'u'llah. Their previously and historically manifested, they say, God in the flesh, Baha'u'llah, their Messiah. According to sin, or having to do with sin, this is what they say. Listen carefully. The only difference between members of the human family is that of degree. Some are like children who are ignorant and must be educated until they arrive at maturity. Some are like the sick and must be treated with tenderness and care. None are bad or evil. We must not feel repelled by these poor children. We must treat them with great kindness, teaching the ignorant and tenderly nursing the sick. Abdu'l-Baha is the one who said that. And here's another thing that he said, right out of their own literature. These are the tenets by which they practice their religion. Evil is imperfection. Sin is the state of man in the world of the baser nature. For in nature exist defects such as injustice, tyranny, hatred, hostility, strife. These are characteristics of the lower plane of nature. These are the sins of the world, the fruits of the tree from which Adam did eat. Through education, we must free ourselves from these imperfections. And I can tell you, ladies, right now, ladies and gentlemen, right now, that what he said here is not true. For you will not find these things in nature unless man is present. If you don't believe me, look around. These things exist with the presence of man only. Injustice. You don't see injustice in nature. You don't see tyranny in nature. You don't see hatred in nature. You don't see hostility or strife in nature. You see the natural behavior for each animal according to its own nature. What they do for survival. They do to eat. They do to protect their territory and their mate, or mates, as the case may be. Nature, without the presence of man, has a perfect and wonderful balance to it. And this religion is trying to say that evil is nature, and it just is not true. What about Baha'ism and Jesus? Here's what they say, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm going to give you two different quotes from their literature, and these are the main ones. And the first is by Abdu'l-Baha, and he said, Christ was the prophet of the Christians, Moses of the Jews. Why should not the followers of each prophet recognize and honor the other prophets also? If men could only learn the lesson of mutual tolerance, understanding, and brotherly love, the unity of the world would soon be an established fact. What's wrong with that statement? Absolutely nothing. I tend to I tend to believe that also, but only the last part. If men could only learn the lesson of mutual tolerance, understanding, and brotherly love, the unity of the world would soon be an established fact. I believe that. I don't know any intelligent person who would not believe that statement. Whether or not that statement can ever become reality, now that's another story, because it's not the nature of man. Man has his own nature, just like the animals. The first part of his statement I totally disagree with. Christ was the prophet of the Christians, Moses of the Jews. Why should not the followers of each prophet recognize and honor the other prophets also? Because he's not just talking about Christ and Moses. He's talking about Buddha. He's talking about Nostradamus. He's talking about all of these people. Then, quite frankly, I can't accept all of those people. I can't even accept most of them, to tell you the truth. Faith versus reason. Listen to what they say about that. And you're going to recognize some buzzwords here that you've heard in the Mystery Babylon series and in a lot of the teachings that you've listened to on this broadcast. Faith versus reason. Quote, there are two kinds of light. There is the visible light of the sun, spelled S-U-N, by whose aid we can discern the beauties of the world around us. Without this, we could see nothing. Nevertheless, though, it is the function of this light to make things visible to us. It cannot give us the power to see them or to understand what their various charms may be. For this light has no intelligence, no consciousness. It is the light of the intellect which gives us knowledge and understanding. And without this light, the physical eyes would be useless. This light of the intellect is the highest light that exists, for it is born of the light divine. The light of the intellect enables us to understand and realize all that exists, but it is only the divine light that can give us sight for the invisible things, and which enables us to see truths that will only be visible to the world thousands of years hence. We must not accept traditional dogmas that are contrary to reason, nor pretend to believe doctrines which we cannot understand. To do so is superstition and not true religion. As to the sufferings of Christ, here's what they say about that. Why did Christ Jesus suffer the fearful death on the cross? Why did Muhammad bear persecutions? Why did the Bab make the supreme sacrifice? And why did Baha'u'llah pass the years of his life in prison? Why should all this suffering have been, if not to prove the everlasting life of the Spirit? Christ suffered. He accepted all his trials because of the immortality of his spirit. If a man reflects, he will understand the spiritual significance of the law of progress, how all moves from the inferior to the superior degree. Abdullah Baha said that. And they also say, we hold that Baha'ism stands condemned by the following statements of Scripture. Matthew chapter 24, verses 24 through 26. For there shall arise false Christs and false prophets, and shall show great signs and wonders, so as to lead astray, if possible, even the elect. If therefore they shall say unto you, behold, he is in the wilderness, go not forth. Behold, he is in the inner chambers, believe it not. And in Colossians chapter 1, verse 19, for it was the good pleasure of the Father that in him should all the fullness dwell, and through him to reconcile all things unto himself, having made peace through the blood of his cross. Through him, I say, whether things up on the earth or things in the heavens. And that's actually a quote from a Christian leader, and his name is blurred here, and it is he that says, we hold that Baha'ism stands condemned by the following statements of Scripture. So you can see there, ladies and gentlemen, that there are quite a few reasons, once you understand some of these religions or mystery teachings, you can see very clearly why certain things are happening. You can understand why your children are being taught certain principles. You can understand why you are seeing things on television that are being ingrained into the minds of the population. You can better understand the movies of the Walt Disney Studios throughout its history. For Walt Disney was not being kind to you or your children. Walt Disney was practicing a great deception. He was, in fact, teaching the mystery religion to the children. He was, in fact, ladies and gentlemen, setting the stage in the minds of the youth of his generation, and I mean the youth that were born and reared on the Walt Disney movies and stories, for the New World Order. You notice that Friday night I played Disney music, and tonight I'm playing it again. And you're going to find out why I do that. Because now I'm going to talk about theosophy. And the United Nations may recognize Baha'ism as the only recognized religion, but I got to tell you that almost all of the New Age concepts come out of the melding of all of the mystery teachings and the hidden religion of the worship of the sun, going all the way back to ancient Babylon, into what is known as theosophy, which was first taught by Madame Helena Blavatsky. And I've told you this many times before. This is where it's really at. This is where you really get the messages. This is where you really begin to understand what's happening and why. Theosophy is also known by its adherents as the divine wisdom. They believe it is the apostate child of Spiritism. And some say that it's mixed with Buddhism. And if you don't know anything about the mystery religions, about the inner core and the highest degrees of Freemasonry, if you don't know anything about the ancient religions of Mithraeus or Eleusis, if you don't know about the ancient Egyptian worship of the sun, if you don't know about any of these things, if you don't know about Diana, if you don't know about Semiramis and Tammuz, if you don't know about Osiris and Isis and Horus, then this is exactly what you're going to think. You're going to think that it's a mixture of Spiritism and some Far Eastern religion, but it's not really. It's a melding of all of the hidden and secret religions that have been practiced in dark chambers and groves at midnight and in tombs and in temples without windows for the whole history of the human race. It is a cosmogony. And I'm going to try to give you the most basic history and structure of worship and belief of this religion known as theosophy, because this is really where it all is at. This is where you're going to find most of the answers that you're looking for if you're looking to find what is coming, what form it's going to take, what it means, and why. You see, theosophy is much more complicated than just Spiritism mixed with Buddhism. It is extremely intricate. It is ancient, and at the same time, modern. It has a world and life view that is very complete. It is fascinating for those who study the occult. And for people who want an easy explanation for everything and want to be a part of follow the crowd into the New World Order type thing, it is the religion. Before you can know anything about theosophy, ladies and gentlemen, you have to know a little bit about Elena Petrovna, who was a Russian girl. At the age of 17, she married a man, N.B. Blavatsky, in 1848. She didn't stay with him very long. She deserted him after 2 months only and led a wandering life for over 25 years. She flitted between Paris, London, Russia, Greece, the United States, Mexico, and India. She became a spiritistic medium early in her life, and for 10 years was under the control of a spirit, she says, who called himself John King. In 1857, ladies and gentlemen, Madame Blavatsky tried to found a spiritistic society at Cairo, Egypt, but failed. She then traveled to New York in 1873, and she sought cooperation with mediums. But just then, so much fraud was exposed that she wearied of the spiritism of the day. And in 1875, she founded the Theosophical Society in New York, aided by a man named Colonel Olcott, a colonel in the Civil War, and she said of it, and I quote, "It is the same spiritualism, but under another name," end quote. Well, it certainly wasn't, as you will soon discover. In 1882, Blavatsky and Olcott visited India together and rounded out their system of religion, of theosophy, by adding Hindu and Buddhist elements. You see, they took as they went along, much as the old Hebrew religion grew and changed and borrowed parts of the religion of the peoples of the country through which the nomadic tribes wandered. And when I say that about the Hebrews, I'm talking long before they ever established any kind of a kingdom or nation, for they were traditionally nomadic tribes, herdsmen. Blavatsky ultimately died in 1891, aged 60 years, after a life of fame, infame, controversy, and mystery. Her greatest successor was a woman, Mrs. Annie Besant, born 1847, died 1933. She was the daughter of an English minister. What better person to move in and take the place of Helena Blavatsky, because she had her own mysticism to add from the Christian religion. And she was later the wife of a man that she left in 1873. And after challenging the doctrine of the Church of England, Annie Besant identified herself with free thought and radical political movements. Then suddenly, Mrs. Besant was converted to theosophy. She pretended to become a scholar, and many claim that that was an accurate claim on her behalf. Others say that it was not. She was a public speaker, and a very good public speaker, and she was a voluminous writer. She died on September 20th, 1933, in her 86th year. Annie Besant's outstanding claim was that her adopted son, Krishnamurti, also called Krishnaji, was the new Messiah, or the reincarnation of the world teacher. This she discovered on December 28, 1925, and in 1926, Baron Philippe van Palant gave his large estate at Omen in the Netherlands to be the headquarters of this new Messiah. Annual conferences were held, with at first as many as 2,000 attendant disciples, while in 1928 there were 1,750 women and 800 men. Some of these ladies slept with the picture of Krishnamurti under their pillows. At Crotona, California, the American headquarters of Theosophy, Krishnaji announced on November 20th, 1931, that he had become convinced he was not the Messiah and refused to receive further adoration, much to his great credit. This is what he said, quote, "I am not an actor. I refuse to wear the robes of a Messiah, so I am again free of all possessions. I have nothing except my creed," end quote. Since then, he has lived in retirement, though giving lectures occasionally, up until the date of his death. Mrs. Besant died in 1933 and was succeeded by George S. Arundale, who upon his departure was followed by C. Jinarajadasa, and I have never been able to pronounce that name, spelled J-I-N-A-R-A-J-A-D-A-S-A, Jinarajadasa, who was the president of the society for many years, since 1945. He was a prolific writer. Among his works are the Golden Book of the Theosophical Society, published upon the 50th anniversary of the Society at Adyar in 1925. Theosophy is called by L.W. Rogers, ladies and gentlemen, a religion, a philosophy, a science, but accurately speaking, none of these apply, for it is truly an attempt at all of them, and yet something way beyond them. It fails miserably at blending science. And it can only be described in a brief outline unless you want to spend a whole lot of time and probably years studying the voluminous material which outlines the secret doctrine of the teachings of Theosophy. We have those available, by the way, and you can refer to Veritas if you'd like to order the set of three volumes. Volume 3 was rare and extremely difficult to obtain until recently, and we have that available. We're going to look into Theosophy's complex ideas concerning God, simply because the doctrine of God is always determinative for any system of religion. And therefore, that had better be the first thing that we look at. But I don't want to get into that until after this break. So don't go away, folks. I'll be right back. And if you're wondering why I'm speaking so slow Friday night and tonight, I've been having a tickling sensation in my throat, and if I talk fast, pretty soon I begin coughing, and then I can't talk at all. That's why you're getting this slow, deliberate treatment.
Hakuna Matata. What a wonderful phrase. Hakuna Matata. ain't no peasant craze. It means no worries for the rest of your days. It's our problem free philosophy. Hakuna Matata. Why, when he was a young warthog.
When I was a young warthog.
Very nice.
Thanks.
He found his aroma like a certain appeal. He could clear the savannah after every meal.
What a change.
What a change in my name.
Oh, what's in a name?
And I got downhearted.
Kind of to feel.
Every time alive.
Not in front of the kids.
Oh, sorry.
Hakuna Matata. What a wonderful phrase. Hakuna Matata. Ain't no passing phrase.
It means no worries for the rest of your day.
Yes, sing it, sing it. It's our problem free philosophy. Hakuna Matata.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, did you know that Touchstone Pictures is Walt Disney? Do you know what Touchstone means? If you don't, I suggest that you do a little research, because the answer to that question might tend to illuminate you a little bit farther into the truth about the Walt Disney Corporation. The Hour of the Time is brought to you by Swiss America Trading. Swiss America Trading specializes in obtaining and making available to you any kind, from the lowest to the highest, from the most plentiful to the scarcest, precious metals in all of their different forms. Real money. When you get into gold and silver coin, it's real money. Coin of the realm, the money of account and the law, constitutional money. It amazes me, ladies and gentlemen, that people don't understand that what they're carrying in their wallets every day is worthless. Its value depends upon the ability of the Federal Reserve to convince you that it has some kind of worth. And of course it doesn't. And since we're in a debt-based economy, the amount of money in circulation has to continually increase as the population increases and as more and more people take out loans, create debt. And so a constant and continuing inflation occurs. Everybody thinks they're better off today than they were in 1954, but I can assure you that's not true. If you go back and look what people made in 1954 and what they could buy with what they made, and look at what you make now and compare it with what you can buy with what you make now, you'll find out that you're not better off at all. And you also have to understand that back in 1954, ladies and gentlemen, only one person in the family had to work to make a decent living for the entire family. Think about that. It's because we are using a worthless paper that is not money, it is not a note, and it is not currency according to any legal definition that you can find. And if you don't believe that, you look up those definitions in Black's Law Dictionary, or any other law dictionary for that matter. And also, if you'll look on the new money that has just come out, you'll see that Federal Reserve System replaces the old wording. Yet if you call the Federal Reserve, or if you check into the law, you'll find that there is no legal term covering anything called Federal Reserve System. Call Swiss America Trading, get your hands on some real money. It's all going to come tumbling down very soon. It has to. That's one of the planks of the Communist Manifesto, which is running the show, ladies and gentlemen. If you don't believe it, take a copy of the Communist Manifesto. Compare America of 20 years ago to America today, and you'll see that almost all of the planks of the Communist Manifesto, as written by Marx and Engels, have been implemented already. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. And do it now. You know how you are.
But, Peter, how do we get to Neverland?
Fly, of course.
Fly?
It's easy. It's make of a wonderful thought.
Any happy little thought?
Uh-huh.
Like toys at Christmas? Labor? No?
Yep. Watch me now. Here I go. It's easier than fly.
He can fly.
He can fly.
He flew.
Now you try.
I'll think of a mermaid lagoon. Oh, underneath a magic moon. I'll think I'm in a pirate's cave.
I think I'll be an Indian brave.
Now everybody try.
One, two, three.
We can fly. We can fly.
We can fly.
This won't do. What's the matter with you? All it takes is faith and trust. Oh, and something I forgot. Dust.
Dust?
Dust?
Yup. Just a little bit of pixie dust. Now, think of the happiest thing. It's the same as having wings.
Let's all try it just once more.
Oh, we're rising off the floor.
You and me.
Oh, my.
We can fly.
You can fly.
We can fly.
Come on, everybody. Here we go. Up to Neverland.
Think of a wonderful thought, and you can fly. Well, that seems to be the way the world is going today. Just think of a wonderful thought. If it feels good, do it. Everything is a learning experience. So what if you hurt somebody else? You learn something by it, right? In theosophy, like its prototype, the Eastern religions, into which Blavatsky melded all of this stuff, and which was originally a reaction against the polytheism of India, and I'm speaking of Buddhism, is remarkably silent and evasive in its statements concerning God. And if you have ever studied Buddhism, you'll quickly discover why that is. Because Buddhism was not a religion. Buddha was not teaching a religion. Buddha was the son of a ruler, a wealthy, educated boy. But he saw the misery and the suffering and the poverty of the people of India. And he decided to try to do something about it. What he taught was a way of life, which if followed by the extreme poor and suffering, would enable them to be more comfortable and happier with their lot. It did not teach them to rise above that condition, and it taught them nothing about God. It taught them a way of life. And that's why Buddhism is silent. That's why it's evasive. That's why it doesn't talk about God. It is, if you really want to know the truth, pantheistic since Buddha. He didn't teach that. And now it teaches an impersonal God, and some Buddhists actually revere Buddha himself and his statues so much that many people think that Buddha is their God. And that's not true either. Buddhism teaches God is all and all is God. Over and over again, theosophic writers speak of the unity of all life. And you hear that in the New Age and in all these New World people. It takes a village. From this principle, considered fundamental, follow many other doctrines. If everything that is God, and this God is thought of as universal life, the limitless consciousness, if you will, the eternal love, if you will, the very source and heart of all that is, it soon follows that every form of activity is conceived of as wave after wave of this life pushing its way up through matter. Everything is God. Man is God. Hillary Clinton is God. Given this, we don't marvel that all religions are esteemed fundamentally one by these people. Again, same principle as Baha'ism. There may be a different dogma, a different emphasis, a different teaching. The brotherhood of religions is the first plank in the platform of the Theosophical Society. Everything is brotherhood. And that comes right out of the mysteries. At some point in her life, Helena Petrovna Blavatsky rose to the heights to become an initiate, an adept, a priest in the mystery religion of Babylon. There's no doubt about it. And we have found the record of her initiation into the Masonic Lodge, so we know that she was a Freemason. She said, every religion has a note of its own, a color of its own, that it gives for the helping of the world. Blended together, they give the whiteness of truth. Blended together, they give a mighty chord of perfection. The last was a quote from Besant. This impersonal God, from which they say all religions emanate, when occasionally described, is spoken of as a trinity. But it's a trinity with theosophy in name only, folks, for it's a threefold manifestation of power, our will, wisdom, and activity, to quote Mrs. Besant. And I used to teach in my lectures, the best way to understand it was to draw a triangle on a bulletin board and write thought, desire, action. That's why you see so many triangles. It represents the trinity of the God of the New World religion. That's where it comes from. Thought, desire, action, will, wisdom, activity. Same thing. Elsewhere she expresses this thought as follows. Quote, trinity of divine beings, one is God, three as manifested powers. End quote. And worse than this, we are told there is a fourth person, or in some religions, a second trinity, feminine, the mother. And this is that which makes manifestation possible, that which eternally in the one is the root of limitation and division, and which when manifested is called matter. It is the triangle below the triangle, the pyramid below the pyramid. It is what is known as and you're not going to believe this, but the name just slipped my tongue, just slipped right out of my mouth and disappeared faster than I could say it. But I will remember it sometime during this broadcast or the next. You've heard of as above, so below. Everything opposes the duality of this world. In other words, their God is not a male God as the Christian God is. It is an androgynous God, possessing both female and male. This, they believe, is the some of it is so far out that it's hard for me to even tell you about it, folks. Some of it is very difficult to understand, and you shouldn't even try unless you want to follow this religion. They believe that this is the divine not self, the divine matter, the manifested nature, regarded as one, which later on becomes she, as triple. She is the fourth, making possible the activity of the three, the field of their operations by virtue of her infinite divisibility, at once the handmaid of the Lord and also his mother, yielding of her substance to form his body, the universe, when overshadowed by his power. You see, I told you this was a very intricate religion. So let me give you one more taste of this, one that you might understand a little bit better. The second person is revealed by interaction between her, the divine matter, and the third person of the Trinity, and thus becomes the mediator. Hence, the second person of the Trinity of Spirit is ever dual. He is the one who clothes himself in matter, in whom the twin halves of deity appear in union, not as one. And I know that you're all thoroughly confused. I hope that it will become clear as we go along. But this, if you understand it, suffices to show that the theosophic conception of the Godhead is very different from that held in the Holy Catholic Christian Church or in the Protestant Church. It is impersonal. It lies at the root of all existence. It manifests itself as power, as wisdom, and as activity, as thought, as desire, and action. When, and only when, it's considered as a spiritual entity, it also manifests itself as divine matter, which is the necessary condition for its manifestation. The second person, wisdom, is dual in nature, spiritual as reason, material as love. The cosmogony that I spoke about earlier comes about in this manner. Theosophy, considering matter eternal, believes the cycles of the universe by the millions and reckons them also as such. They believe that we are at present in the fifth subrace of the human root race. And even a subrace goes on for millennia without any visible changes, preparing for a new subrace, which makes its appearance suddenly. They say that in the new age, the new age of Aquarius, the new world order, the fifth root race will disappear and the sixth root race will emerge. The present subrace called the Teutonic is a subrace of the Aryan root race. Remember, I told you this is all racial and religious in nature, ladies and gentlemen. And they believe that the Anglo-Aryan race is a superior race and that all the other races are inferior, being guided in their developmental evolution by this superior race. And if they find races that they believe cannot evolve properly, they destroy that race, get rid of it. They believe that the Aryan root race was preceded by the Atlantean, and this in turn by the Lemurian race. Remember all those terms that you already heard and all of these other things, and in the Baha'i religion also, and in the Rose and Cross? They believe that the Lemurian race was the first that can be truly called human, as it was preceded by semi-animal races, monkeys, if you will. The proper history of man, according to Blavatsky, began no less than 18 million years ago as a result of her clairvoyant investigation, for she claimed to be a medium who could talk to the spirits and see into the other world. She was in contact, she claims, with divas and mahatmas, terms and titles that she got from her travels through India. As a result of her clairvoyant investigations, the Theosophists published maps of the world as it was 800,000 years ago, and again as it appeared 11,500 years ago. And you're beginning to see in the New Age movement maps that are depicting the world as it will appear after these earth changes that will destroy the fifth root race and leave the sixth root race as the inheritor of the world. And what do you think that's all about, ladies and gentlemen? They talk very clearly that those who cannot make the shift in collective consciousness will not be allowed into the new world. You better listen to these people, because they're telling you that if you don't accept what they're teaching, you're going to be destroyed, murdered, if you will. And I mean it, murdered. They may use you as slave labor for a while, but they're surely going to kill you eventually. And they make no secret of it. None whatsoever. They tell us of the Atlantean race living on the Atlantean continent 800,000 years ago. They believe that this continent formed a belt around the earth stretching almost uninterruptedly from Mexico right across the present Atlantic Ocean onto Egypt and Asia, and that the similarity in the pyramids that exist in these countries is proof of this. They believe in an older continent, the Lemurian, once stretched from the Indian Ocean to Australia. From the same occult source of information, Theosophists know that during the Atlantean period, very early immigrations resulted in the grand civilization of Egypt, which was in progress long before the time assumed by modern historians. And some Jewish scholars believe that they are the survivors of this ancient religion. And I don't know if they're in the minority or the majority. I really don't know. Other so-called Aryan scholars claim that they are the survivors and the true inheritors of the intelligence and the civilization of these previous root races and worlds, if you will. And this scholar believes that they're all full of crap and it's all a bunch of bullshit. And I can prove my statement much easier than they can ever prove theirs. And if it's true that every age the old race dies and the new race emerges and takes control, then what they are really saying is that they are the old devolved race, that they really don't belong here, if they believe their own crap. That's what they're saying. They're saying that they're really inferior, and they don't even understand that, because they say that those civilizations were wiped out by a superior evolutionary jump in the progression of the human race. And if that is true, and they're claiming they're the survivors, and that they're descended from these ancient races and civilizations, then what they're saying is they are inferior. Truly. But they claim to be superior. Now you figure that out, folks, because I'll tell you, no matter how I look at it, none of it makes any sense at all. It doesn't pass even the most basic of common sense tests. If the human race is truly evolving, you certainly don't want to be part of an old race, do you? I mean, if you believe all that stuff. Me, I just believe in the human race, and I don't care one lick about any of it. Of this early civilization, we know that very little is left beyond the pyramids, and they attribute this to the great convulsions, which they say took place 11,005 years ago. They believe at that time, of the Atlantean continent, only an island was left about as large as all modern Europe minus Russia. And due to the cataclysm, this island subsided with terrific suddenness. And the sea, which then covered what is now the desert of Sahara, was driven eastward so as to completely deluge Egypt. And in support of this so-called clairvoyant assertion, for they can't prove it in any other way, a Mexican document is proudly pointed to, which has been translated in 1893. They say it is in itself an ancient manuscript of immense antiquity, and it says, they say, that the catastrophe took place 8,060 years before the writing of the Bible. 10 countries, it says, were torn asunder in the convulsion and sank with their 64 million inhabitants. And we'll continue this tomorrow night. And no, ladies and gentlemen, the tickle in my throat, for those of you who are trying to guess, is not cancer or anything terrible. I have a sinus condition. When my sinuses are acting up, I can't breathe through my nose at night. I have to breathe through my mouth. My throat gets incredibly dry, and it causes me all kinds of problems, and that's all it is. Good night, again, and God bless you all.
I can see what's happening.
What?
And they don't have a clue.
Who?
They'll fall in love, and here's the bottom line. Our trio's down to two.
Of course.